the fuck inside. Live in a world under the rules of God. I'd rather live in a world where I can please play my odds.
So I have no time to make my day.
And though it's weird, I don't
give a damn. I just want to play. I just need a temporary release from this reality.
Hey, welcome to 2GM's One Mic. I'm Joe.
And I'm Nikki.
And this is episode 18, Savage Scream.
All right, yeah, we actually, by popular demand in a landslide vote, we will be reviewing Savage Worlds today.
Yeah, we're going to spend the entire main segment on Savage Worlds.
Yeah, so any announcements this week, Joe?
Yeah, we've been getting awesome emails from a ton of you.
Yes, I posted on the Twitters the thank you.
Yeah, it was awesome. You guys have filled my heart with gladness, especially Bill from Maryland.
Yes, thank you, Bill.
Thank you so much, Bill. That email made my day.
Yes, I remember Joe texted me and he was like, you should go read some of our emails right now. And that's when I did all those Twitter posts, because you guys make it so it's not just me and Joe talking to a soundproof room.
So. Right. It's so much better when you guys feedback with us. It's nice to interact with you guys and keep the questions and comments and editorial statements coming, because it really makes all of this worth it.
Yeah, and I wanted to say something, because I don't know if anyone other than me who posted it on Twitter saw it, but our forums are under attack by people who actually don't like our show. So, I mean, it got really kind of quiet after everyone was saying that we suck. So, come join our forums. Seriously, give us something to talk to.
Yeah, let's talk. You know, I'd like somebody other than me and Gary to start a thread.
Yeah.
It'd be nice.
Yeah. So, you know, come hang out at the forums, you know. I have a better chance of looking at that throughout the day, because it's not a blocked site, than anything else at work, so.
I check it compulsively.
Do you really?
I should post.
You should, maybe. Yeah, so awesome. And we posted all those pictures up on Facebook when we were playing Legend of Drizzt, mm-hmm. So I hope everybody saw that.
Yeah, there was an elusive picture of the producer and the editor.
Yes, there was. So.
There's a really good picture of Stick on that one. Like, by the way, like, the goofy face he's making is because his mouth is full of chewed up koala yummies.
Yeah, it was really gross.
Yeah, but you can't see them in the picture. So
it was really funny, though.
It's just him making a really stupid face.
All right, so once again, thank you, everybody. You guys rock. Let's take a break and move into the main segment.
Actually, I wasn't done.
Oh, then by all means, keep going.
Oh, my question to you was, did you have any more announcements? I actually would like to shout out to a close personal friend of mine from Wiener, Arkansas, named John Bonners.
Oh, yeah?
Shout out to John, man. Keeping the faith.
Awesome. All right, cool. No, I actually had no announcements this week.
Oh, you had nothing?
No, it's not that I had nothing. We've covered it all.
Yeah.
Our fans rock.
Yeah, basically, it's just you guys definitely make it worthwhile, and we really appreciate all the feedback we've been getting. It's fantastic. And we don't have any real announcements to make, so unless you guys want us to announce something, you know, anything you guys want us to say on the air, you know, email to us.
Yeah.
Or awesome. Facebook us, or Twitter us, or go on the forums, or post on the website. You have plenty of avenues available.
Yes, you can't say you can't get a hold of us anymore. So
we will roll out to a music break, and we will return with our main segment, Savage Worlds. Dun, dun. Yes, welcome to our discussion on Savage Worlds.
Yes, so we actually did not get a chance to sit down with anyone to play another setting because everyone's busy.
See, Nikki won that vote because I was just going to lie and say we did, but
No,
I wasn't going to lie.
But we have the advantage in that we've been playing it now for several months, what with my Star Wars campaign. Mm-hmm. So we still do know the system. And you know what? I actually did learn the system.
Yeah.
After we talked about how neither of us knew it, I got it.
We got a lot of shit for that.
Yeah.
I got a lot of shit for that.
Yeah,
for saying that I got annoyed at people not knowing the system and then admitting later that I didn't really know the system.
Because your hypocrisy knows no bounds.
It knows no bounds. But also I'd like to clarify on that point. I don't get angry or annoyed by people not... First of all, I never show it.
That's true.
Second of all, I don't really get annoyed when people don't understand the system. I get annoyed when they don't know if they have to roll high or low or what dice to grab. That's really what annoys me.
See, well, anyway, that's a topic for another day. And let's just focus on Savage Worlds and not...
Not my own neurosis?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Because I'm not going to argue with you about that right
it's
now.
It's not an argument.
Oh, you're wrong. But anyway...
I didn't say I was right.
Anyway.
I was just clarifying that I am not as much of a hypocrite as I said I was.
No, you are.
Oh, okay.
So here we go. Savage Worlds.
I'll take that.
There are a million settings for this game.
Yeah, it's actually really cool. It's probably one of the best systems that became generic that
I've ever
seen.
Better than D20, in my personal opinion.
Oh, yeah. It's a better generic system than D20 because Savage Worlds does one thing, and it does it very well, and that is fast, furious fun.
Yeah, it does. It really does. I mean, it's so easy as a GM to pick up like a handful of enemies, throw them at your PCs at any level, and know that they will live through the combat. The combat won't drag on for hours on end, and it'll still be fun.
Yeah, combat won't slow you down. Actually, what I like about Savage Worlds combat is the granularity, where you can use miniatures and grids and the whole nine yards, and it really does not slow the game down.
No, not at all.
You know, the one Deadlands Reloaded game I've played in, the guy had 80 cowboys.
Right, yeah, you've mentioned that.
Was it 80? It was 80 or 38. Somewhere in there.
Somewhere between 1 and 80.
Yeah, somewhere between 1 and a shitload. But there was a ton of guys. It had to be... 80 is probably an exaggeration in my mind, but it was definitely... we were far, far, far outnumbered. There were six mm-hmm. of us. And, you know, it didn't slow it down at all.
No.
All he did was he knocked the miniature down for shaken, took it off if it was dead. That was it.
It's so easy to keep track of. Oh, mm-hmm. my God. As a GM, it's so easy to keep track of just about everything. You know, like, you don't have to worry so much about a shit ton of dice stats and, like, numbers on a piece of paper. You just need to know a couple things, you know. What is, you know, do they have armor?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If they don't have armor, awesome. You just have to know, oh, okay, they got hit. Okay, there's one.
Well, yeah, if they're hit, it's shaken.
Yeah, hit, shaken, like you were saying, you know. And then if you get, like, a raise over that, oh, look, they're down. You know, it's mm-hmm. very, very simple. And it's a even more broken down system as far as initiative goes than the Deadlands Classic.
Well, historically, it's actually not based on Deadlands Classic.
It's
based on the miniatures game Great Rail Wars, mm-hmm. which was a simplified version of Deadlands Classic.
Mm-hmm.
So it is based on a simplified version of Deadlands Classic, ultimately.
Right.
But
well,
if I remember correctly, Mr. Hensley had said that it's actually based more on the Rail Wars game, which mm-hmm. I've never played. Both of us have played Deadlands.
Right.
And
which
the
is
ancestry,
my point of
right,
reference.
Well, and I'm agreeing with you. I'm saying that the reference point is, or that the ancestry is clear
mm-hmm.
there. And, you know, I've always had my problems with Deadlands. I've told you that before, that I always felt the game was one step too complex.
Right. And this gets rid of that complexity.
Yeah, it gets rid of all of it. It almost gets rid of too much in one case that we changed.
Right. And we did change the initiative system in our game.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that was more of a personal taste. There was
yeah,
nothing
that's a personal thing.
There was nothing wrong with just dealing out one card to everybody and going, okay, ace.
Right. I mean,
ace,
the first
king, queen.
And that's true. The first, really the first, what, four sessions? We played completely vanilla.
About six, actually.
Was it six?
It was about six, yeah.
We played completely vanilla, and it mm-hmm. worked very well. The only issue was I took the gut skill, even though they changed that in
yeah,
Deluxe.
That was, I had to, yeah. Yeah, that was funny. You were like, I have guts, and we all were like, that's not even in this game.
Like, well, sorry, I had the Explorer's Edition.
Right, but so that was just a personal thing. That was more of a cinematic at the table. It fit more thematically with our game. It had nothing to do with it being broken in the system.
Right, and that was, of course, after we had played it completely straight for a little while. And the game itself is rather elegant as it plays. I like the addition of the wildcard D6
mm-hmm.
to the skill rolls. I think that does make the players feel special.
Yeah, it does, because I don't get that role at all.
Unless you have an enemy who's a wild card.
Right, and you guys haven't come up against someone like that in the game yet. I've been ramping up to that. Mm-hmm. So when I do get that, I'm going to be like, yee, look, I'm special, and I'm going to die. And
yay,
like,
two
no
dice!
Time. But, you know, it'll be fun. So, no, I like the edges and the, they're not, are they still hindrances?
Yeah, edges yeah. and hindrances.
Yeah, the edges and hindrances, I think, are still absolutely phenomenal. They blow the pants off feats every day of the week.
Yeah, one cool thing about the edges and hindrances compared to Deadlands is, while Deadlands, the names of the edges and hindrances still show the Western roots
yes.
sometimes, but the application of them is very generic.
Yes, very much so. Like level-headed, which is something that you got that I know Chris and Doug have. I don't know. What are some of your edges, Joe, that you have in the game?
I don't think I have any.
You've got to have some.
No, I took hindrances.
Did you?
I have loyal and bloodlust.
Oh, okay.
So.
I think everybody has loyal and bloodlust.
I think everybody has bloodlust.
I know everyone has bloodlust.
Well, we play it.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, we play that. I'm not really sure if everybody actually has that hindrance. Oh no, I do have an edge. I have the edge. I can't remember the name. It's improved dodge that I have because I'm +2 to hit. I need a six to hit you.
I know Chris has
an alertness.
Yeah, Chris I know has improved dodge. I know he's got that. He's got frenzy, which adds to his melee. He's got all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, doesn't he? Well, he's got the one we mentioned in the last episode that he and Doug both took.
That's
the
level-headed.
Level-headed.
That's
okay.
Level-headed. Yeah. And yeah,
I can never remember the name of that.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got, you know, like I mentioned, frenzy. He's also got improved frenzy, I'm pretty sure, if I'm remembering right. Mm-hmm. Which he gets an extra attack if he does a melee and all the stuff. He was going for that kind of a character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he plays our crazy knife guy.
Yeah, so I mean, it's interesting because I'm really not a fan of feats like from D20. I think I've mentioned that. But the edges, to me, they ring a certain chord with me for
they
some
were,
reason.
You like the advantage-disadvantage system as
I
opposed
do.
To the feats?
I do. And it's not as much to keep track of, I think. Just personal opinion.
Yeah, I liked how in 7th C you had to pay for your disadvantages.
Yeah.
You actually paid character points for them. I always thought that was kind of neat.
Okay, but we're still talking about Savage World.
Just design point.
So what else do you want to talk about for Savage Worlds? I mean, we've talked about how easy combat is to run. As mm-hmm. a player, how easy is it to be in combat?
It's pretty cool. You know, it takes... You know, in Deadlands, you have a skill number which determines how many dice you roll, and then your stat tells you what kind of dice you roll.
Right, yeah.
In Savage Worlds, your dice, the type of dice you roll is the kind, I'm sorry, die, the type of die you roll is tied to your skill. So you really only have to pay attention to the skill, not stat plus skill.
Mm-hmm.
So they're no longer grouped together like they used to be. Although they generally tell you what attribute your skill is tied to so that you know, for experience reasons, how to move
right,
it around.
Right.
Honestly, I think Savage Worlds does the level system in almost the most elegant way I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Where you level up every X amount of points.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the only thing I've seen done better is the game Forward to Adventure,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't use points. It assigns numbers of sessions to get to that level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with Savage Worlds, you could really do that because the levels, novice, seasoned, experienced, novice, seasoned, veteran, heroic... Legendary.
Mm-hmm.
You could really, instead of doing 5 points, I think it's like 25 points between them. There's
something,
it's you get lines on your character. On the character sheets we're using, there's lines where you can fill out your upgrades depending on at which increment of 5 you're at. You get an upgrade for every 5. And then mm-hmm. you get a big upgrade for every change in name from novice to seasoned.
Right.
And the again, Forward to Adventure, instead of assigning points... You do numbers of sessions. And I think that would be a really cool hack that you could do to Savage Worlds is say, okay, you start out at novice, and then after 4 sessions, you hit seasoned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah, I mean, you could just assume 5 experience points.
Well, it's like I've been running a very fast-paced game because of where I want you guys to be when mm-hmm. you go take on Bastion. So it's been easy, like having that very set ladder to work with. I could plan out when I wanted you guys to hit each one of those milestones so that now when you show up on Bastion, you guys are going to be fucking legendary.
Right.
Literally legendary.
And I think that says something about our group. I mean, our group, because of the way we run these shorter campaigns, I like the Savage Worlds experience system because it's easy to grok.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, it's not like groping around a different game and figuring out that 12 XP is the perfect to get us a right. lot of advancement in those 8 sessions or 12 right. sessions.
Yeah, I could very easily look at it and go, okay, I need to do boom, 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 and then bam, you guys had it. And I was able to then take a glance at everybody's character sheet and kind of up my, you know, my NPCs as I went on, just so that they were on a comparable level, which it wasn't hard at all. I mean, mm-hmm. I changed a die type. You know, I now roll a D10 to shoot just like half of you guys do. I mean, it's really easy just right. to keep track of.
Right. It's really cool. Actually, wait, are you saying that the novice, seasoned, expert, that those are based, that those tell you what die type to roll for the creatures?
No. Oh, No. Those were 2 separate thoughts.
Oh. Although that's a good hack, too.
This is true.
You know, if you have veteran characters, everybody, they all roll D10s, you know,
yeah.
or, well,
yeah.
6, 8, 10. Yeah, 10s.
Yeah. So, I mean, also a different way to look at it, you know, but you guys seem to follow that kind of, that progression kind of naturally almost. So it was easy to just kind of up myself with you guys so that you still felt like you were being challenged and there was an element of danger and you weren't walking through swatting flies.
Mm-hmm. So. Which we're not. You know, each encounter, that's one thing I do like about Savage Worlds as well, is that each encounter still has a level of danger.
It scales nicely.
Yeah, it does. It scales very nicely. The game feels very polished to me.
It does.
Yeah. Have you ever read Guns of the South?
No.
By Harry Turtledove?
Yes, I got through half of it and then fell asleep.
Okay. All right. That's okay.
I did.
But one of the my favorite parts of that book, for those of you who don't read it, it's about time travelers who bring AK-47s to the Confederacy. Mm-hmm. But in the book, there's this one scene where a fella is talking to one of General Lee's sons about the AK-47, and he says, "This is not an invention." He says, "This is not an invention. This is at the end of its invention cycle. This is a perfect product."
Mm-hmm.
And I feel the same way about Savage Worlds. Deadlands, I felt, was a very clean, polished system.
Mm-hmm.
And as you progress through Deadlands into Savage Worlds, you can really see the complete refinement. I think it would be difficult to further refine Savage Worlds.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even our add-on of the drawing cards for Rolling Smarts, that's a regression. You know,
oh, it is.
You
it
know,
is.
That's a clunky mechanic that I think doing away with from a design standpoint, was a great idea.
Yes, and it's just a stylistic, thematic point for
right.
us.
Right, I mean, that's just a thing for our group. Our group is weird. All of
we
you
are
listeners,
very weird.
All of you listeners should have realized that by now.
Oh yeah, we're very strange. I don't think I've ever come across a setting for Savage Worlds that I didn't think was awesome.
Well, and I think that comes from the of Savage Worlds. Savage Worlds is about fast, furious fun. So every single setting is going to have to be stuff blowing up and people dying.
Yeah.
Every setting is balls to the wall crazy. I'm sure that there are some bad adaptations of Savage Worlds. In fact, my favorite game for tonight,
mm-hmm.
probably not the best adaptation of Savage Worlds.
Okay.
Which is why I picked it.
Okay.
But also, when you look at a game like Necropolis or Sundered Skies or Totems of the Dead, all of which have been favorite games,
mm-hmm.
or you look at something like Tour of Darkness, or you look at the... I don't think they ever did the Weird War II stuff in Savage Worlds. I'll have to look that up and
okay.
put that in the show notes. But they did a D20 version of Weird War II, and I think that would be perfect for Savage Worlds.
Mm-hmm.
Really, any game wherein the heroes are expected to be heroes and blow shit up is going to be almost perfect for Savage Worlds.
Oh, definitely. I agree. And I think it's something to, it also harkens back to the way the licensing for Savage Worlds works. I mean, you were telling me a little bit about this the other day, about how, why don't you explain when someone wants to make a setting?
Well, when someone wants to make a setting, as far as I remember, it's been a long time since I looked it up. Apparently, you email Pinnacle, who makes it, or Great White Games, or whatever they're called. Pinnacle, I think they're
Pinnacle.
So called. Yeah, it's Pinnacle. You email them your pitch for the setting, and then you ask them politely if you could use the system setting for free, and then they will look over your setting to make sure it works with their, that they're willing to let you brand it, and then they give you permission, and it's
yeah.
free.
Yeah, and I think that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way you should do it as opposed to as paying for a license.
Yeah, I think, well, they used to charge for it.
Well,
although I think really allowing people to use it for free but still keeping it as intellectual property gives them some control over who is going to make a Savage setting.
Right. I mean, because I've seen some really shitty D20 games.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we all lived through the... Through
the D20 boom.
Yeah.
The D20 boom was... Bessem. But, yeah. I, like, just throw that out there. But, like, it was... you saw an influx of just being like, okay, how much is it for the license? Boom, here it is. And then here's a crappy, crappy game.
Right.
That doesn't work with the setting. Or this was a great idea, but you probably shouldn't have used D20. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't find that a lot with Savage Worlds. And even games like that I may not particularly get up and play, it's not because it's a fault. The game doesn't match with Savage Worlds. It's just because I don't like that particular genre.
Right. You know. Well, and I mean, for our group, the genre that Savage Worlds emulates is very much our group. You know, very, very fast paced, very fast, furious and fun, you know, very mm-hmm. fast paced, very, very slashy and hacky and very, you know, destructive in, well, not destructive, but very proactive, we should say, violently proactive, one. Very proactive. It doesn't even necessarily have to be violent. Savage Worlds, non-combat subsystems are on their own also very good, especially when you start looking at the fantasy toolkit and the sci-fi toolkit mm-hmm. and the various pinnacle stuff that's been produced.
Yeah, I do have the sci-fi toolkit. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some cool shit in there.
Yeah, very much so.
The fantasy toolkit. I have the horror toolkit.
Right.
And it also has some fantastic shit in there. A lot of vampire stuff. You know how I am about vampires.
Oh, definitely.
You know,
right.
I just
right.
love them.
Right. The thing that I would like to bring up just really kind of quick is I have the deluxe edition.
Mm-hmm.
And there are pages and pages and pages of stats for gear. And
yeah.
there is nothing better as a GM and even as a player. It's better for the players, even more awesome for the GM, to be like, what kind of weird weapon do you have? Let me see if I can find something that's kind of vague. Like, you're not sitting there going, well, is it kind of like this? Or is it kind of like that specific gun? Or is it like in Scion? It was yeah. like, we'd pick up a, like, you guys would be like, you know, Joe, you're a gun guy. So you'd be like, you'd rattle it off. And I'd be sitting there looking at the chart of five guns saying, is it more like a 9mm or is it more like a 30-30? Which people who are gun nuts know, those are two completely different guns, not even in the same ballpark. And that's what I had with Scion. So being able to pick up Savage World and be like, oh, you have this? Hey, look at that. I have stats for this because they stated out everything. It's so cool.
The Savage Worlds Deluxe Edition book is beautiful.
It is.
You know, you guys, those of you who have the Explorers Edition, if you really like the game, I highly recommend the Deluxe. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it's got all sorts of cool stats in it. And they're not paying us to say this.
No, they're really not. You guys asked us for a game review, and we are giving you a game review.
And, you know, I was kind of shocked that everybody picked Savage Worlds, but at the same time...
I can see why.
Yeah, in thinking about it more before the episode, I know why you guys picked it. It's a great generic system because it's not too generic that it ends up like GURPS, where you really have to look through all the different rules subsystems to pick what
God,
you want.
Oh, God, yeah. It doesn't have nearly the weight and baggage of GURPS.
Right. It doesn't have the kind of granularity GURPS has. GURPS has a much more fine adjustment level, but that's because Savage Worlds isn't GURPS. It's not designed to do everything. It's designed to do an action movie.
Mm-hmm. It does it very well.
Yeah, and you can cross genres with action movies. I mean, Helsing is just as much an action movie as Die Hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, although Die Hard's much better.
Oh, well, there's that, yeah.
But, you know, just because one action movie has different window dressing doesn't make it a worse or better action movie. And Savage Worlds really does that action movie thing perfectly.
It does.
You know, you can do Indiana Jones with Savage Worlds. You can do Star Wars with Savage Worlds, as we've proven.
Mm-hmm.
You can do Vietnam. The heart of the Tour of Darkness setting, which I almost got to play once, but got too drunk.
Nice. You could even do zombies. I mean, Necropolis.
Yes. Well, Necropolis has a lot of zombies. There's actually a Savage Worlds zombie apocalypse campaign. I'll put this all in the show notes, folks. I can't remember the name of it. My apologies to the people who run it. I will definitely shout out to you guys on your forum to let you know I was talking about it so you can defend my half-assed explanation of you, but I think it was called War of the Dead, and it was sold as a PDF,
mm-hmm.
but it's a subscription model, so like every 3 months you'd get the next part of the campaign.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was actually pretty cool, and they did 1 year, and now they're on year two.
Oh, sweet.
And that's the zombies. It has all the zombie stuff. The first book, if I remember, there's a big fat book at the beginning, it's PDF, that describes how the zombies work, and then each one's a plot point campaign that's released every couple, about it. They figure if you're gaming once a week, this is how long it takes, and then they release the new one.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. That's very cool.
Yeah, I thought it was a really neat model. Much like D20, a free license like Savage Worlds, a nominally free license, I should say, because I suppose they could charge you because mm-hmm. they own it. But let's go on the assumption it's free. A free license should really encourage innovation like that without restricting it too bad. And from what I've seen, the Pinnacle people, you know, if they see your stuff and they like it, you can use it, which is good. I'm glad they have a little bit of control over it so you don't end up with a D20 bubble.
Yeah, which was terrible to live through.
Yeah. I mean, my hat is certainly off to Mr. Hensley and Pinnacle in general.
Oh, definitely. It's they an do amazing great work. Game.
Yeah, and every company that produces Savage Worlds material, Triple Ace, for instance, and Gunmetal Games, fantastic. All of their work is top-notch.
Oh, definitely.
I have yet to see a Savage Worlds product that is not done beautifully.
Yeah,
I agree. I think part of that is because the folks handling their licensing make sure that you're doing something nice.
Yeah, it's obvious, really. It is. And seriously, I understand why everyone loves this game, because it's awesome. It will go on my shelf next to my prized, you know, possessions. It's not going to get put up on the secondary shelf with all the games that I may or may not get to.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like, my copy of Savage Worlds is not next to Attack of the Humans.
No, not so much. You know, or my quick reference guide to Shadowrun. Haven't played that yet.
You haven't played Shadowrun?
No.
Really?
Really.
Actually, Shadowrun would probably work better in Savage Worlds. Frankly, I never liked Shadowrun's system. It's D6 dice pools. I think you could, but actually, if they had good rules for cyberware, you could run one hell of a Shadowrun game with Savage Worlds.
Awesome.
I'd call it Savage Run.
You're terrible at this.
I'm very punny.
Anything else you'd like to talk about for Savage Worlds for the fans?
You know, as a player of it, it's nice because what I like about it as a player is it's kind of fiddly. Like, I like the version of the character sheet we have, and it seems to be reproduced over and over and over again, is they actually, you actually fill in the little dice on your character sheet, and I like that. I mean, I'm a very, you know, ADD tactile learner kind of guy, so I like being able to, like, fill in things on my character sheet and see things at a glance without having to read.
Yes.
Not that I don't love to read, but I like to see
Well, it's nice. It's nice to have that just visual cue, especially if you're playing in a setting that kind of has low light or whatever.
Yeah, so. Well, and then for some reason, I find more satisfaction in erasing the D8 and filling in the D10 than I do changing a number from 5 to 6.
It's true.
I don't know why. It doesn't have to make sense, folks. It's just me being me.
That's true, and you are very strange. But
Danke schön.
Bitte. But anyway, like, so as a player, it's awesome. I've actually only run it. I haven't actually got to play it, but something about running Savage Worlds, I do kind of still get to play it.
Yeah. Because you can throw out so many enemies without, you know, without bogging the game down.
Right. And then there's some games where when you run it, it seems very much like you don't get to get a full grasp of the system because you have to keep track of so many different things. And all you're doing is asking people to make dice rolls, and then they're rolling, you know, you just have a number that's on your side. But I can do a lot of contested rolls. And I do feel like I'm a little bit more immersed in this system than in other ones.
That's good. I would actually still love to run Savage Worlds, and we will play it again. I think maybe I'll set up a one-shot.
That'd be fun.
In the spring, maybe for my birthday or something, I'll do
That'd
a one-shot
awesome.
Of something.
Awesome. Then, there's so many Savage Worlds games I want to play Necropolis. I want to play Sundered Skies. I want to play Totems of the Dead. You know, there's so many of them that I would just love to sit down and play.
Yeah, they're all so rich. I mean, I have yet to run into a Savage setting that doesn't immediately grasp me.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean... Good, awesome. Good pick, fans. Thank you so much for choosing it. I was a little shocked at the overwhelming response for Savage Worlds love. But I would just like to say for you Pinnacle people who came over from their website to us, I hope we've done your system justice.
Yes,
I hope so. If you guys have anything else you want to tell us to talk about on the show, communicate away.
Yeah, please do. I have to pee, so let's take a break.
Okay, we'll take a break.
And we'll come back to favorite game of the week. Does
okay.
that sound good?
That sounds great.
All right, cool.
Welcome back. Now it's time for favorite game of the week, and I'm going to lead off this week.
Oh, please go right ahead.
With Low Life by Andy Hopp, a Savage setting.
Okay.
The only favorite Savage setting this week, sadly enough.
We kind
of ran out of games that we own that we could do for Savage Worlds, but I actually do own a Savage setting, and it is called Low Life. It's by Andy Hopp. published a few years ago now, right around the time Savage Worlds came out. It was one of the first Savage settings. Published by Great White Games, which is also Pinnacle. They changed their name for a little while, now they're back to being Pinnacle. So it's a really weird setting.
Understatement of the night.
Yeah, Low Life is a very strange setting. So after the Great Flush, it's our world after the Great Flush. The entire book is a poop joke, and it's a very damn good poop joke, if I must say. It ranks up there with the Aristocrats as a poop joke, because it is like the culmination of poop jokes. So Mother Earth is the name of the planet, and it has been through nuclear war, biological contamination, plague, alien invasion, gates opening to Middle Earth, I think something else, nanites or some shit. Oh, the moon crashed into it at one point. The moon happens to be made of cheese, so you can go to the moonular cheese fields. And there's a bunch of different player races in this game.
Just talk over my giggling, because that's going to happen this whole time.
Okay, yeah. So the whole game is giggle-inducing. In fact, there are little creatures called Giggities that fly around, and I think that name is giggle-inducing. But so in the world, you play, the group of characters is called a heap.
Yes.
And the different player races are worms, which are either nematoid or regular earthworm-type humanoid worms. You can be bodles, which are what's left of humanity, which is basically people just kind of like so deformed and crazy that they don't even look like people anymore. They're basically just like heaps of vaguely humanoid flesh.
Twinkies!
What? Well, I'm not there yet.
Ugh.
Those are the creamphilians that you're talking about. The creamphilians are the sentient Twinkies and
ding-dongs, I think.
Ding-dongs and things who that have survived and have become a sentient species all their own, centered in the dingdom of the dong. And then there's, which is right next to the keister of God. And there's also, the creamphilians, croaches, who are the cockroach people who eat poop.
Yes.
In fact, poop actually has a price in the equipment list because croaches eat it. Tizzants, which are kind of a mixture of different animals that come from somewhere, no one really sure. They're called tizzants because, you know, tizzn anything.
Nice.
And UFOs, who are the aliens that have been left over from the ancient invasions.
Nice.
So the UFOs. And piles, which are my favorite, which is what happens when a poo-mancer goes wrong. They create a... they can create a pile, which is a sentient pile of garbage and poop, or just poop, that is actually a sentient thing. And I believe the tagline for their race in the book is that they may be stinky, but they want love just like everyone else. And
I remember looking at this book on your shelf, picking it up and flipping through it and going, this is absolutely vile. Like,
yeah, the pictures are fantastic. It's all done by this artist named Andy Hopp, who also wrote the book. And it's in many ways, it's less of a role-playing game, more of an art book, kind of showcasing his drippy, cartoony kind of art. Oh, I forgot two of the races, Horks and Smelves. Horks, which are basically orcish-looking things made out of phlegm, and Smelves, which are a cross between Santa's elves and Smurfs that can inflate their nose to really big and float around. But they can't see anything when they do that, so it's not a great power. And the whole world has, like, these really cool cultural things going on. Like I said, there's the Dingdom of the Dong and the Keister of God, and then there's the Horkish Kingdoms and all these different areas around the world. There's one part of the continent is called the Great Big Dead Thing, and it's just this gigantic dead monster that's been there for 1,000 years rotting.
Nice.
And people live inside it and crawl around it. There's earwax mines and things there. And it's a bizarre game.
It is a bizarre game. I was dead serious when I said I was flipping through it going, this is the most vile, disgusting thing I've ever seen.
It's so cool. And the only unit of measurement in this game is the yort. It has no definition. So, a town could be 5 yorts away, but you could only be 5 yorts tall.
So it's kind of a flux.
And it could be teeny, teeny, tiny, only consisting of like 1.5 yorts. So there's no unit of measurement. Everything's in yorts. It weighs about 3 yorts. You know, it could be almost a yort long and weigh like 500 yorts, or it could be as light as a feather, only 3 or 4 yorts.
Nice. Nice.
And like I said, the whole world is this like disgusting flush pile. It's almost like human-occupied landfill or hole done in a way that isn't so sexual.
Okay.
And so gross. Hole was probably the grossest game I've ever had. This is a more poop joke version of Hole. Whereas Hole was like a poop joke mixed with a sex joke.
Okay.
It's Aristocrats done badly.
Mm-hmm.
This game is the Aristocrats done well. Because the sexual jokes in this do exist. There's a monster called the MILF. Which always appears as a sexy member of the opposite sex and then strangles you with its prehensile tongue. Those creatures, you know, they're one of the sex jokes in the game. The hair bears, which are little asses with beards that run around and bite people. And then there's just all sorts of crazy shit. There's even a full plot point campaign. As well as many adventure seeds to take you all across Mother Oyth searching for the Great Soup Kitchen, which is a genetic storage bank to restore the earth.
Nice.
Yeah, the best part in the game, in my opinion, are the religions. You know, I get a kick out of studying religion anyway, and the religions in there, Jemima's Witnesses, are the ones who are, it's a Creamfilian religion that teaches that long, long ago, the human race was evil and took all of the ancestors of the Creamfilians and forced them into prisons of plastic to survive until they were consumed. And so once a year, they all get together and smash things that represent the human race. And then there's all religions are called holy rolling. There's Stanism, in which Stan tells you can do whatever the hell you want, so do it.
Mm-hmm.
There's Jeezel freaks who have mixed Elvis and Jesus together. So they all carry lower cross tees and they say like, and they'll be like, this is a hunk of burning God, right? They say all sorts of crazy shit like that. They'll be like, Lord, have mercy, right? Like, it's all like that. The whole thing's a running, they've confused Jesus and Elvis. It's the oldest religion. And then there's also there's another religion that worships the human race, the human race, and mm-hmm. they are the ones who collect all the technology and stuff. It's a very strange, hilarious world.
Yes, it is.
And in a way, I also selected it because it is one of the only settings that I don't think is a good fit for Savage Worlds.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't see it as being an action movie.
No.
I see it as being a creepy cartoon for adults like Ren and Stimpy.
Yeah.
Old Ren and Stimpy, not new lame Ren and Stimpy.
That's very true, yes. Yeah.
You know, I see it being like old Ren and Stimpy. Like, I still remember that one episode where Ren had all of his teeth knocked out and there was just the nerve endings hanging there and they started pulling him out with tweezers. That's the kind of game that Low Life is. Not so much a game of, high adventure.
No, not so much.
No, definitely a game of low brow adventure. And it is hilarious. I mean, come on, what game can you be a walking pile of poo?
This is true.
It's awesome. So, yeah, you guys should check out Low Life. It's fantastic. I don't know if it's still in print, but I do know it is available through DriveThruRPG. Links in the show notes.
Awesome.
As always.
Okay, so
what's your favorite game?
My favorite game this week is actually a setting, which I know we did Bloodhounds of London a couple of weeks ago, and so that's kind of what inspired me to pick up this book as my favorite game this week. I have in my hands World of Darkness Chicago. Now, I know we've mentioned it in passing a couple times. We are actually from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So when this book came out in 2005, which I don't remember it being 6 years old until just, you know, when I picked it up and was like, oh, when was this published? Holy shit. It was 6 years ago. I looked at it and I was like, well, I wonder if they did it right. You know, like when you're from a town and you're from like a major city and they one of the gaming publishing companies puts out a setting book, you're always like, okay, really? Did they actually come to, like, New Orleans? Did they go to L.A.? Do they know what they're talking about? Someone did their homework.
Well, that's partly because the old World of Darkness Chicago, Vampire Chicago.
Right.
They had never been.
So this World of Darkness Chicago was spot on. I want to say the book is broken down into four sections. There is the first section, which is Chicago. It covers the history up until it was 2005. And so it went from the founding of the city all the way up until when Mayor Daley took bulldozers to Migs Field and carved up the runways. It was one of the airports. So that was pretty recent. And I remember reading that going, whoa, holy shit. And it covers all the architecture and maps and all this kind of stuff. And then it's got supplements for vampire, werewolf, and mage. Like the flagstones of World of Darkness. And it is a stellar book. Like, it was $40 when it came out. I don't know how much it is, what the going rate is for it now. And I was like, $40, I don't know. It's huge. And it's done, gigantic. It's gigantic. It's a gigantic book, and it's done right.
Actually, if that book were to come out now, it'd probably be 60.
Oh, easily. Easily 60 bucks. And I'm trying to, like, there is so much.
Because, I mean, it's got to be 400 pages, is it? It's got to be close. Three something.
It is 420 pages.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we're talking a massive amount of material here. You've got, like, on the cover, they have the werewolf wearing a t-shirt from the alley. Which, you know, when I saw that, I was like, But they do all this weird stuff with the, they go into the underground, right? Which is something that, you know, okay, subway systems, blah, blah, blah. Okay, but there's an actual underground of Chicago, of all of the unused railway lines. And in the vampire section, they talk about who inhabits these, in who inhabits the underground. And they give you plot points. And as you're going through and you're reading the history and the key places in Chicago, they'll give you it from the mortal World of Darkness perspective first. And then when you go into each one of these vampire, werewolf, mage sections of the book, they bring up those landmarks again and kind of give you a almost a setting point or what could be going on in your campaign. And I used this book to great effect in one of my summer vampire games. Like, I went through and I was like, oh, wow, that, you know, because we did Chicago ourselves. And
yeah, I had built my own Chicago.
We built our own, though, but, like, this, it was a totally different Chicago. In my mind, those were two completely separate realities. Because, like, I could sit there and I'm like, oh, okay, in ours there was, you know, we had that weird fish vampire in the Shedd Aquarium. Whereas, you know, and it was Elysium. Mm-hmm. And whereas the Shedd Aquarium was populated by, depending on which part of the book you're in, tons of different stuff. And they cover weird, like, sidebars every once in a while. And they'll be like, you know, it could be, like, the underground could be populated by a bunch of vampires and having an underground kingdom, all mafia style. Or it could be this crazy guy, and they never go into exactly what kind of a monster he is. They just kind of flesh him out just enough to make him a bad for your campaign. And I was really impressed with this book. I remember reading this book and coming to you and Josh and being like, oh my God, they did this right. And you said, you're like, well, I might actually buy it now. So
I still haven't bought it, although now you're making me want to go out and get it.
Like, there are, like, accurate maps in here, which, yeah, I don't know how accurate they are now, 6 years later, but at the time they were pretty fucking accurate.
The city doesn't change that much.
Yeah. They just cover everything. Like, if you've never been to Chicago, you can pretty much pick up this book and run a convincing game. You know, and it's World of Darkness. So there's your creep factor, you know, going on in here.
I know I've been very impressed by your talking up of this book for years now. And, you know, to me, I've, you know, being from the city, like both of us are, I'm a big fan of anything set in Chicago. Dresden Files is set in Chicago and he does it generally okay. But when you, I mean, you're right. That cover with the guy with the t-shirt from the alley at Belmont and Clark is just fantastic.
Yeah, and, you know, in the book, you know, just because you mentioned Belmont and Clark, in the book they actually refer to it as Clark and Belmont, which if you're ever actually down there, that's how everyone from that area refers to it. They don't call it Belmont and Clark. They call it Clark and Belmont. So, like, when I picked it up and I looked at it, I was like, whoa.
Yeah, it's Clark and Belmont.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, someone did their homework. And I really don't know. It's a setting book. So if you're not interested in setting books, you know, I'm not going to go on too terribly much more about it because, you know, I'm from the city. So, but it's definitely worth it if you want to play any of the flagships for World of Darkness, you know, Vampire, Werewolf, or Mage, and you want to set it in Chicago. Because it gives you great seeds if you've never been there. It gives you a feel for the city and lets you immerse yourself in a way if you've never been, yet you want to pretend like you have. Or, and if you have been and then you do live around here, you get to see this, like, you can go to the city every day and you see it in your normal perspective, but if you read this book, you can kind of tilt your head just a little bit and kind of see it.
Oh, in the neighborhoods I work in, I almost don't want to.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, they do a whole spread on Englewood, so,
yeah, like, yeah,
it's pretty cool.
I was actually just in Englewood, but my co-teacher lives there, so, well, he lives in Gary now, but up until a couple weeks ago, he lived in Englewood, and so I dropped him off every time I worked.
Yeah, and they cover, like, there's a couple sidebars where they kind of allude to the Chicago politics, you know, but they don't really go into it because they really want you to flesh it out on your own. But
the last machine.
You're right. And there's a
Quote, oh, by the way, for those of you listening who have not been to Chicago, Englewood, not the best neighborhood. Not the best neighborhood. It's pretty bad.
Yeah. There's a quote on the back I was going to read really quick. Chicago isn't corrupt. It's passionate, genuine, willing to do whatever it takes to be the city it wants to be. And corrupt. So, you know, it's I love my town. I love my city. And this is an excellent book.
Good.
That represents it very well.
So. I will have to definitely pick that one up. I hope the rest of you listen to that. And I mean, granted, we're both from Chicago, so I don't know if...
yes, you totally dropped into that. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We're both from the city, so, you know, if I don't know if you guys are interested in it, but it's definitely something that you guys should check out if you're looking for a setting. You know, Chicago's a great town, too.
Yeah. So it's an awesome book. Really, I recommend it.
Cool.
So it's a good book to have on your shelf next to all your World of Darkness
games. It looks
games.
Pretty too.
It really does.
All World of Darkness books look pretty. So what does the House Dragon have for us today? He's back on that rocking horse.
Yes, he is.
And he's holding and he's got tinfoil wrapped around his face, and he's holding a broom.
Okay, well I'm gonna go with not aliens.
No, I'm not gonna go with aliens on this one.
He's kind of got. Like that 5-year-old trying to be a knight look.
Dude. Yeah, he does. No, there's definitely some knightliness going on. So there's lots of knights going on in the gaming realm. So you're going to have to be more specific, guy. You're going to have to be a little bit more specific.
I'm seeing a flag. A flag blue.
Oh, with a fleur-de-lis.
Oh. Okay, so French.
French. What do we know that's French?
I haven't a clue.
House Dragon, this is the third time I will ask you. And the last time, bring me the book.
What you got for us, yo?
Oh, it's a supplement for a game neither of us has ever played.
Hey! Everyone was bitching about us having never played up a game and doing a review on it. Here you go.
Yeah, here you go. this is for a supplement called This is a supplement of a game called Kingdoms of Legend using the Pathfinder system. And the game itself is by Interaction Point Games. And it's called Knights of Legend. It covers...
Knights of France, actually.
Okay. It's called Knights of France for Kingdoms of Legend. And it's a very cool little book. The dragon showed it to me earlier and let me look through his notes and look through the page itself. So Knights of the Kingdoms of Legend setting is one in which there are elves and orcs and dwarves and things. I know there's elves. I don't know the setting well enough to tell you what...
There are dragons.
There are also dragons.
Yes.
I don't really know the setting well enough to describe that, but I do know historical France fairly well, and I can tell you that this book is set around 1415 in France, and it's damn good historically. It lines up. One of my favorite sections of this book is towards the beginning of the third or fourth chapter, the geography chapter. They really go into exactly how you address certain... ranks, social ranks of nobility, and exactly what those ranks are and exactly what they mean. They also, in that same chapter, the geography chapter, there is a chunk of the book, a good chunk of the book that's devoted to the local history of every single major fief.
Who they're at war with too.
Yeah,
right?
I was reading a passage on Aquitaine, and they had some awesome stuff in there, in Aquitaine, I suppose you'd say in English. And they had some really good, they were talking about the foundations of it, where it comes from, who rules it, who was ruling it, what king they're with, all that good shit is in there.
I also know that in there they have some rules and mechanics that they add in for, like, jousting.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, tournaments and stuff like that, which is pretty fucking cool. Like, yeah. I mean, that's really never something I really got into, like, as a gamer, but I think it would be fun to try. You know, like a tournament. Like, how cool would that be? I know...
What?
Like, didn't Mr. Salvatore talk about that?
Yeah. Yes, he did. And that sounded really cool. Having looked at this book from earlier, I actually teach this subject right now. It's kind of funny. I'm in the 1200s right now in my class. I would actually love to run a high medieval game.
Yeah?
Yeah. And I don't know if I'd use Pathfinder. I might. Pathfinder is an incredibly popular system out right now. And
it is, and I admit I've never actually looked at it.
Yeah, I haven't either. I've heard it's basically D20, but I've also heard that they fixed a lot of stuff. So
right.
You know, and some of the rules in here are pretty cool. There's actually a little chart that shows you exactly how to win a tournament, like how you gain points in the tournament to determine which side wins.
Which for me would be a massive history lesson.
No, this book reads like a history lesson. It doesn't read like Wikipedia either.
Which is good, because that would put me to sleep.
So there is no bibliography, but it does look great.
I think it runs for about $6 as a PDF.
Yeah, it's 32 pages. You know, it's a quick read. It looks pretty cool. There's a lot of rule stuff, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
There's new weapons. There's a new archetype for the monk called the Friar.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe Kingdoms of Legend uses Christianity as a religion.
Don't quote us on that, though.
Yeah, don't quote us on that, because I'm looking at the Friar right now, and it's looking like these are all Christian. These are most definitely Christian values, but I'm guessing they probably don't use, you know, paladins of Jesus Christ.
Probably not. Yeah, if I remember, like, just glancing through it, it looked kind of like history with a fantasy twist.
Yeah,
so,
it does.
Probably the same moral guidelines, but probably not in name.
Yeah, it actually, from what I've seen, from what I was looking at, it's more history than twist.
Mm-hmm.
The map is fantastic. The map here between the Kingdom of England and the Kingdom of France. It goes from the Holy Roman Empire down into Spain, and it shows all of high medieval France, and it's all the cities are where they're supposed to be, and all the duchies, the major duchies, are where they're supposed to be, too. There doesn't
really
appear to be any
too.
Shift. Yeah,
yeah, it's pretty cool. That is a very interesting yet awesome find, House Dragon.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I think sometimes I would like to look into more of these strange little, not strange, but these littler publishers probably need some more love from 2GM's One Mic.
They do. We should really hit that.
Yeah, so little publishers out there, let us know if you have something cool that you want us to talk about, because we will gladly check that shit out.
I would love to review your game.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And Knights of France by Jason Rice from IPG is a really neat little supplement, totally worth your $6.
Definitely worth your $6.
Yeah, definitely worth $6. If anything, even if you're not running the Kingdoms of Legend setting, the rules for tournaments...
Yeah, that alone is it's awesome.
Yeah, and in infusing just a little bit of medieval ethos to your D&D campaign would be probably worth the $6.
Oh, definitely.
So great find, House Dragon.
Thank you, sir. All right, let's take a break, and then we'll get to currently playing, which I'm not quite sure what we'll talk about, but. We'll talk about something for Star Wars. So.
All right, because we're still playing Star Wars, so we'll talk about that
Star Wars,
after the break. I'm not telling you, or tell you what. I've learned some lessons in my life. Lessons in my life.
Welcome back
to currently playing
Star Bastards.
Continuing with Star Bastards. It's awesome.
Yep, it is awesome. And we haven't actually gotten a lot done in the last 2 weeks.
No, we haven't. You missed a week. And then...
Actually, no. I was there.
No, you missed a week.
I did miss a week.
And then the week after, all we did was play catch up because we all haven't seen each other for 2 weeks. We're all like, let's just gossip. Yay. And then last week.
No one showed up till 8 o'clock.
Yeah, no one showed up till 8 o'clock. So we
and
just
I
were
have
like,
to go to bed at 10. Yes. Well, at 11. I have to drive home at 10.
So we were all like, blah, blah, blah.
You guys made it to Thyfera. You got down onto the planet.
We made it to the planet.
Oh, my God. Like, we did do some role-playing the first night, which is where you guys got your debriefing from your commander. So we got that far. And then we showed up the next week, and you guys made it onto the planet. And I was just like, oh, fuck it. Like, seriously, just fuck this. And, you know...
So next session, we are going to have a full report of actual funness.
Yeah.
Got to play Robo Rally twice.
Yeah, that was cool.
That was fun. Yeah, you actually liked it.
I know, I did.
Nikki bitched the whole time. She was like, I'm not going to play this game. This game is stupid. And we were like, Chris will really like it. And she's like, this game is going to be stupid. It's going to be like that other game, also known as every single game Joe brings that I think is stupid. And so I will not play. And then we sat down. I'm like, just take your fucking cards. And she played it. She's like, okay, this game's actually pretty fun. So for those of you who have never played Robo Rally, that is fun.
I ate my words. But
actually, that's our currently playing. We did play Robo Rally.
We did play Robo Rally.
And we had fun.
We did. Doug pointed out one thing about Star Wars that kind of, it kind of hurt my feelings, and I'm not sure how I feel about it.
Shout out to Doug.
Shout out to Doug. So if you just give me a minute, I'd like to just bare my soul for a minute.
Okay.
Doug said that my game is easily distractible, and I'm not sure if that's my fault. At the time I said I would own it, but I'm not sure if that's my fault or if that's just the circumstances of the last 2 weeks.
No, I think most of the last 2 weeks has been circumstances specific to the last 2 weeks. You actually did own it. You said part of it is you are unwilling or incapable of reining us in. I don't think you're incapable. I think, but you know, if you're there to game, you need to be like, all right, back to the game.
Yeah.
You know, and that could be you're just lacking assertiveness because you're having the same feeling the rest of us are, where we're just bullshitting.
Yeah.
And that's okay. I don't see that as a failing or a fault. Okay. I don't see the game as easily distractible because when we're on, we're on. It's just the last 2 weeks have been off.
Okay.
That's all.
Okay. So, it's kind of been bothering me. I was like, oh, does my game suck?
No, your game does not suck. Actually, we talked about that after you left.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I was like, what's been going on? And Doug's like, I think it's just the last 2 weeks have been kind of rough and everybody just wants to blow off steam. And he's like, it's just, you know, we were late. And, you know, Kevin was being completely honest when he said it's just because people are late.
Yeah.
Last week was just because people were so late and it wasn't anybody's fault. It just happened.
Mm-hmm.
And the week before was because you'd been gone for a week and we all were playing catch up.
Yeah, that's true.
So, no, it's not your fault. Okay. You're not doing anything wrong.
Phew. Okay.
Yeah. No, because we actually talked about that. And Doug is like, what did he say? I said, I wonder what we're going to play next. And Doug said, I'm not looking forward to the end of this. He's like, I really like this game. He's like, I know it has to end because we want to play other stuff. He's like, but I'm really liking this game. And okay. We all three of us were like, yeah, this game's awesome. We don't want it to end early or anything like that. So no, it's doing good. I'm really enjoying Star Bastards a lot. It's a very fun kind of character. It's a very fun kind of game. It's very lighthearted, very diehard, very, you know, yeah. It doesn't take itself seriously.
Not at all. I do not take myself seriously in any game I run.
Yeah, well, but in this game, there's really no, I'm glad that there's very little seriousness to be had.
Yeah, well, when I set up the game, when I run a Star Wars game, I want it to feel like Star Wars in a sense that it's Star Wars, but you're in the universe and you're not fucking with anything in the canon. Because
right,
there's nothing I hate more than people who fuck with canon.
Mm-hmm.
So I want it to feel like Star Wars and you can exist in the same universe as everybody else. And I don't want to take it too seriously because I think that ruins Star Wars so many times. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, Star Wars itself is not a very serious business. Not the first three, anyway.
Right.
It seems to me as well, we were talking a little bit about what game we would like to play next.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still pushing for Dresden Files. I think that'd be great. Doug said he wanted to play something either darker or with more depth.
Sounds good.
Yeah, so we were kind of... I kept saying Dresden Files, but they kept saying Shard.
Okay, we'll see what happens then, I guess.
Yeah, but we're not looking towards the demise of your game.
Right, I know, I understand. I know, I'm getting to that point, too, where I'm just like, okay, I want to show up and, you know, be a method actor again. So, mm-hmm. And not so much a bookkeeper.
It's
so.
Doing great, but it's awesome. A great game. I'm enjoying Star Bastards, and for those of you who are interested in this part of our podcast, I hope some of that meta crap made some sense, and I hope you guys enjoyed it.
All right, so we'll see you all in 2 weeks. We are actually going to be doing another show-long review of a game forthcoming. It's kind of a surprise, because after you guys said Savage Worlds, we were like, well, let's pick another one of our favorite games that we have done. I think we've done 48 now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to go through and, you know, Joe and I are going to confer and we're going to argue and we're going to pick one that we really want to do an entire show on. So I may post a tweet probably Friday, the week of this comes out. So okay. Right after Thanksgiving, actually.
All right,
so,
yeah, Black Friday.
Black Friday, look for a tweet from me with what we're going
to
do.
So. All right, and text me to remind me to put that on Facebook.
No problem.
Because I'll be in Arkansas.
All right.
So I'll be in Arkansas.
Sounds like a plan.
Yep.
All right.
All right.
Have a good 2 weeks, everybody. Yep. Have a good Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
This has been 2 GMs, 1 Mic. You can visit us on our webpage, which can be found at 2GMs1Mic.com. You can find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at 2GMs1Mic. If you'd like to shoot us an email with your own questions and feedback, please feel free. We are 2GMs1Mic@gmail.com. That's the number 2, GMS, the number 1, MIC, @gmail.com. 2GMs1Mic is a 3-die stunt production produced by Stick Jones, edited by Chris Helmkamp. The main title music is by The Mustard Men, who you can find at mustardmen.com. You can find the links to all the music in our show notes at twojamsonemic.com.